You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. Monday marks a powerful milestone during the Holocaust. On January 27th, the concentration and extermination camp, Auschwitz-Birkenau, was liberated. It is the site where more than 1 million people were murdered, most of whom Jewish. And this year marks its 80th anniversary. In honor of this moment in history, KCRA will be airing an extended version of its documentary, Always Remember Your Name, which chronicles the life of a Holocaust survivor who now calls Sacramento home. You can watch the 90-minute version on KCRA this Sunday at 7 p.m., as well as on My58 on Monday, January 27th at 8 p.m. Joining us now is KCRA anchor and reporter Deirdre Fitzpatrick, special projects producer Dave Manicheri, and photojournalist and cinematographer Victor Nieto, the team who spent really 5 years spanning multiple countries to bring this documentary to life. Welcome.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Appreciate it.
Okay, years-long reporting journey spanning multiple countries, a trip to Europe. Let's just start from the beginning. How did you end up finding this Holocaust survivor in Sacramento?
Facebook. Seriously, no. Yes. Now, her daughter, Sonia Edwards, lives in Sacramento, has for almost 30 years. And so one day I'm sitting on the news set at KCRA, and I open up a message from a viewer, and it says, "I think you should meet my mother." I'm like, okay. I keep on reading. And then she starts to explain that her mother is in another documentary that was been produced in Europe about people who had very parallel stories to Anne Frank. And as I start reading, I go down this rabbit hole. I'm like, what? And she starts telling me about this woman who, at the age of four, she and her sister, 4 and 6 years old, were deported from Italy to Auschwitz along with their family members. They were mistaken for twins by Dr. Joseph Mengele. And through these unbelievable twists of fate and kindness from very unlikely strangers, they survive. And then, unbelievably, are reunited with their parents in Italy 2 years after the war ends. And so I read this, and I can't even believe what I'm reading. And that's what started this, was literally a Facebook message from one of our viewers. And she reached out to me because she had seen me at races. We're both runners.
She's a runner.
That's literally how this all started. So
I know you're an avid marathon runner.
That apparently we had run into each other at a race. And so she literally just sent this thinking I might find it interesting. And so 5 years ago, that's what started this whole quest of, like, we need to tell this story that nobody here in this country has heard before.
Yeah. And when you get that message, I mean, you don't really know where it's going to take you, but it took you on quite a journey, a journalistic journey at that. What struck you about the first time you met Andra Bucci? What was the first impression that you had?
She can, how vibrant she is. I mean, you see stories and you hear about people that are Holocaust survivors, and a lot of them have what we'd call PTSD today. But Andra's the opposite. I mean, you can see when she tells her story, she sort of shrinks down into being that little 4-year-old girl again. But most of their life, I mean, she's funny and cracks jokes and was making fun of Victor and I throughout the entire shoot. I mean, constantly. So most of the time at our expense. But yeah, it just sort of the amount of life. And a lot of that comes from post-war going to this orphanage run by Sigmund Freud's daughter, of all people. So it was just, they got trauma therapy as children and learned how to sort of build their life back up from the beginning. And as a result, she's just this amazing kind of funny woman who just kind of enjoys life. She still has her issues, but I mean, it's kind of amazing to see how she reacts to everything.
Given that they were four or not, they were so young, she must be in her 80s now.
They're 84 and 86. So she lives here, Andra, the younger sister, and then her elder sister is Tatiana, and she lives in Belgium now.
When you start the documentary, the one that originally aired a couple months ago, there's going to be an extended version on Sunday. You lead with the tattoo that she has, that is her number. And it's important because it explains why the title of the documentary is Always Remember Your Name. So I want to play a quick clip to give listeners a better understanding of why.
Your mother seemed to know why they would put a tattoo on you and refer to you by number. And she told you something very important about your own name. What is it she told you?
Yes, always remember your name.
And that just underscores how dehumanizing a number is, right? It's a way to lose your identity.
And certainly for the adults at Auschwitz, and it was mainly adults, for very few children who actually survived Auschwitz, that was critical. But you got to think of a child 4 and 6 years old. If somebody doesn't call you your name every day, you will forget your name. And way back then, the mother seemed to know intuitively that if her children survived this horrendous place, they might not know who they were. And to be reunited with those children later took a first name and a last name. And so when the parents had survived the camps that they had been in and where they had been prisoners, there were lists of survivors that were published in newspapers. And that is eventually how the parents were able to locate their children, who by that time had been taken to England.
Wow. The fact that these two young girls resemble, they're sisters, but they resembled twins, that was pretty instrumental in allowing them to survive. And this is very much a family affair for the three of you as journalists. You got to meet not only Andra, but you you met generations of the Bucci family. So I want to play a clip from Andra's daughter, Sonia. And Sonia talks about everything that has happened for these two sisters to survive, defy just extraordinary odds, let alone thrive in these camps.
No, right. She knew telling them to remember their name, right? She knew and she didn't know, right? So all this little thing that happened, having them wearing matching clothes, like you say, all these little events that happen are faith, moments of faith.
Can you explain why that was so instrumental? I mean, it's a little bit of a history lesson here, when it was very difficult for children, especially, to survive when they were sent to Auschwitz.
For the most part, in Auschwitz in particular, Auschwitz was a work camp as well as a killing camp. And so if you could work, you could survive. Children were considered, especially under the age of 10, no. So they were almost immediately exterminated. Joseph Mengele, they called him the Angel of Death. He liked to experiment on prisoners, but in particular, he had a fascination with twins. And because Andra and Tatiana were both dressed the same by their mother all the time, and they were roughly the same size, close in age, Mengele mistook them for twins. And so they were, somebody said, "Are they twins?" And their mother was like, "Is that a good thing?" And the guard was like, "Yeah." And she said, "Yes, they're twins." And they were hauled off and put in a barracks instead of killed. Luckily, they were never experimented on, that they remember. Most of the kids that were twins were, and they have lifelong effects afterwards. But it is one of the many things that helped save their lives.
And they wrote a book as well about this, also titled Always Remember Your Name. And when you include the family in this documentary, you can just see the investment that they have in Andra's story. It's just palpable. What stands out to you about how her grandchildren and her children, her daughter, how invested they are in what happened to them at such a young age?
Well, we joke that Victor has become the favorite grandchild in the family. Yeah. Because they definitely have brought all of us in. Victor maybe a little bit more so. But I mean, I think because you had to capture the interactions between them, you see them with your eye in a different way even than we do.
Absolutely. Like the greatest part about like Falling Around is not only engaging with their book that they wrote, They'll Always Remember Your Name, and then talking to historians, but following them and becoming part of their family. Like there's no joke, like I am the adopted grandson, and that's what Andra and Sonia, to a larger degree, they're grandmas, they're mothers, and they kind of take you in, and you get to experience that generosity and humanity. And somehow, Andra especially has been through this incredible, incredible journey. And it was, from a filmmaking perspective, it was very challenging and fun to weave these three narrations for the story and kind of show what happened through their eyes as a kid, through the others as adult, and through the historians that we talk to.
Yeah, I mean, that's such an important point, because each of you have an instrumental but a different role in this documentary. Deirdre, you're interviewing, you're a producer, Dave, and so you're also doing deep dives. But Victor, you're really getting this different perspective as a photojournalist, a video journalist, a cinematographer. How did that shape how you wanted to bring this documentary to life?
Well, I read their book a couple times beforehand, and I knew that was a driving point for me, is to make it more present time rather than past. And if we use the book kind of in the present terms, and then go with them along their journey, it makes everything converge at the same time. So you're kind of left with a what's going to happen next moment. Like, we're with, obviously, Andra after the fact, but in the narrative device of the journey, we are kind of like, what's going to happen next? And we kind of, as an audience, kind of explore that as it happens, which was fun, yeah, to a degree, as a narrative perspective.
I also learned a great deal about Italy's role in the Holocaust. Mm-hmm. She is an Italian Holocaust survivor. I want to bring in a clip that you had from the documentary from Dr. Shira Klein, who's the head of the history department at Chapman University. And she is an expert in Italy's role in the Holocaust.
There are some misconceptions about Italian Jews. There are a bunch of them. But probably the most common one was that Italian Jews were treated really well in Italy, and more generally that Italy is seen as sort of this oxymoron, like a bit of a paradox.
E ricordatevi, in ogni momento.
Mussolini had come to power in 1922, and Italy was a dictatorship, and so any executive decision was by the fascist regime, and this was no different. Mussolini had racial theorists who put together these laws. Some of them were inspired by the German race laws, because Germany had passed its Nuremberg laws in 1935, 3 years earlier.
Do you think that this has been overlooked in history, especially as time goes on, when we're talking about this now in 2025?
Oh, certainly. It really has. And that was one of the things in writing this that we all really kind of gathered around, was that not only is this Andra's story, but it is also an opportunity to sort of tell the story of Italy's role in the Holocaust, because they tend to shy away from it. There's a section that was in the version we already ran, but it is a little bit expanded, that Tatiana, the older sister, she's still asking for an apology from the Italian government, because they haven't. They never have. Germany has. Germany has apologized. They give them actually a stipend. But Italy has yet to apologize for their role in it. And it's kind of one of those things that they embrace that. They like there's a myth that Dr. Klein talks about. She calls it the good Italian, which is, well, we were the fascists, but we were the good fascists. You know, we're the ones that we didn't really want to. Germany kind of dragged us in. But as she pointed out, they had their own, you know, racial laws that they put together that were almost exactly the same as the Nuremberg laws that Germany put together.
Well, you didn't just keep the story here locally. You hopped on a plane. You went across the Atlantic and you traveled to Europe with Andra, and you met her sister, Tati, who lives in the area as well. I want to start in Rome, where you all traveled. I want to start with you, Victor, because you're the eyes to this. Did it give you a different perspective being in Rome? When you think about Rome, it's a huge tourist destination, but you're going for completely different circumstances. Did it remove that veil of tourism?
Well, we went straight to like the heart of Rome, where the Colosseum is and all that. And, you know, not ever seen that before in my life. It kind of hits you. And then you start to bring in the history of like, there's so much going on, especially in Europe compared to where we're from. And then kind of like let that hit and then kind of build from there, you know, start talking to Tati and Andra. And then we go explore ourselves in the Jewish ghetto, where we found incredible stories with just random people that live there. I think Deirdre has a better grasp of that, but we found these golden plated blocks on the ground, and each one of them is marked with a Holocaust, a Jewish member who was lost in the Holocaust. And they're all scattered around there in the Jewish ghetto. And it's interesting stories throughout, especially with the history they have there.
Yeah, I know as a field reporter, you know, you sometimes get the best interviews from strangers who just walk up to you. And that happened to y'all in Rome with Giacomo Mascotti.
It was, I mean, if you had like called up Central Casting and said, I'm looking for an elderly, wise, well-dressed Italian gentleman who could speak authoritatively about the history of the Jewish ghetto, that's who they would have sent. And this is just a gentleman who walked up to us. He saw us shooting. We had budgeted a very limited time to spend shooting just video in the Jewish ghetto. And he walked up and gave us the most remarkable history lesson that brought it to life. And it had impacted his family. He had lost family members, but he still was full of hope and of course knew the story of the Bucci sisters, as so many in Italy do.
Well, let's play a little clip of how he knew about the Bucci sisters.
How well known is the Bucci sisters' story in Italy?
Of Tatiana, all the people know Tatiana and the sister.
And why is their story so important to people here?
Because they were children and they survived. Listen, from Rome, not from Italy, from Rome, 200 children died in Auschwitz. 200. And you know, to find after the war two Italian children from the north of Italy still alive was a miracle.
Yeah, you can just hear how extraordinary that moment is from his perspective, and that the sisters, one who lives in Elk Grove, is so well known, you know, thousands of miles away. What does this travel mean for Andra and Tati when they go back to Italy, when they go back to Rome?
It's multiple things. They don't want this to ever happen again, which is something all Holocaust survivors, I think, would tell you. But they also send a message that, you know, they told us and they told these kids, because they go to Italy and then they gather like 200 kids. They either get on a train or a plane and they walk them through the camp. And so their whole goal of doing this is both for the story to live on, which is the idea of testimony for the Shoah, but it's also they keep sending the message, we want you to think for yourselves. You can get all of this information from social media, from Wikipedia, from wherever, but we also want you to think for yourself, be cognizant of being critical of those sources, look at those sources, think about what you're doing, and that children have a right to grow up to be adults. Doesn't matter who they are, what age they are. They have a right to grow up to be adults. And that was really their core message. And they put themselves through going through that camp and becoming little kids walking through this all over again. And you can see it just in their body movement. And they do it because they just feel it's so important to tell the story.
And the reality is that they're kind of among the last, Vicky. You know, I mean, the clock is ticking, and there are very few people who are still physically able to go and do what they do. And in Italy, I think we determined there were just like three, the two of them and maybe one or two other people. But they're 84 and 86. The point is going to come when they can't do this anymore. And that in-person experience for these students is so valuable. And so that was another big part of why we push for this kind of legacy for them to have their story documented, so that the kids who don't have that opportunity to spend time with them can watch and hopefully still pull all that information in, and they can become witnesses to share that story.
Because Andra has been back to Auschwitz 40 times?
40 times. They didn't start telling this story publicly until about 25 years ago. In fact, and that was very common of Holocaust survivors. First 50 years of their life, nobody talked about it. When they went back after the war, nobody talked about where some of these survivors had been. In fact, they tell stories about being teenagers on a train and somebody seeing the numbers on their arms and asking, is that your phone number? Is that your phone number? Yeah. So they would cover it up. It wasn't until 25 years ago that they started publicly telling this story. And I think they'll tell it until they can no longer tell it themselves anymore.
You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. And if you're just joining us, I'm talking with KCRA anchor and reporter Deirdre Fitzpatrick, special projects producer Dave Manicheri, and photojournalist Victor Nieto about their documentary, Always Remember Your Name, which chronicles the life of an Italian Holocaust survivor who calls Sacramento home. So now you're doing a second feature film version. This is 90 minutes. The first one was 60 minutes. Why?
A lot of reasons. The main one being that as we approach the 80th anniversary of the liberation of Auschwitz, when the Russian soldiers came in and saw what had gone on, that's one of the reasons. The other is we got a massive response to that first version that we ran. We had so many questions from viewers, so many. And Deirdre put it really well. A lot of the people were just like, we just want to know more about this family. We want to live with them a little bit more. And making a film, you kind of come to the realization of that's sort of what you want. You want people to be drawn in and actually be part of this family. And we had so much more footage, and people had so many more questions about what happened to them. What was their time like in the camp? What was it like after the camp? That fortunately our management was like, we need to do more. We need to do more than just the 48 minutes that is on, you know, is on tape. And so we literally wrote an entirely new documentary under the same name that is running on Sunday. Yeah.
Victor, that must have been nice not to have to leave all of that video on the cutting room floor.
To be honest, the initial rough draft was around 70, 75 minutes, and I fell in love with that. And I think we talked to our management, Derek, and it was like, is there any way, maybe later down the road, you know, and, you know, sometimes, you know, be careful what you wish for, because there's a lot more work.
Yeah. Yeah, editing an extra 30 minutes is no small feat.
No,
so.
But we got some other stuff from the viewers had questions, and then obviously stuff that Deirdre and Dave wanted to add, and I think it came out beautifully. I'm excited about it.
You know, one other thing is I feel the thing that I heard a lot from people was that they were so surprised that it was uplifting and hopeful when they watched. And I think they went into it thinking, I should watch this. And then they came out of it saying, I want to watch this, because that's how they communicate their message. You can't talk to hundreds of middle school kids. I'm a boy mom. You can't talk to them unless you connect with them. And these two sisters walk into a room and they own it. They take the oxygen out of it and then they share it back with you. There is something about them that is just different. And they have this ability to make people listen, but in a way that makes you absolutely fall in love with them.
Finally, we can't ignore that this anniversary coincides with a ceasefire between Israel and Hamas. The first Israeli hostages were released, as well as Palestinian prisoners, on Sunday. More than 1,200 Israelis were killed on October 7th, 250 hostages taken in the 15 months since. The death toll in Gaza is more than 40,000, the overwhelming majority of which are women and children. When we have these conversations on Insight, there's an important distinction to make when talking about people, whether Jewish, Israeli, or Palestinian, versus their governments, right? And one person does not speak for the community at large. And I think it's important to preface this. But where does this documentary fit into what's unfolding today?
I think there's a really stark part, like just very brief part, but we talk about how the children ask questions of Andra and Tatiana. And somebody got up and asked that very question. It's like, what's your opinion of the conflict going on now in Gaza?
Because we were there 3 months after it happened.
Right. Mm-hmm. And so literally Tatiana just looked at these kids in this auditorium full of kids and said, I've made my views on this pretty clear. As far as I'm concerned, it doesn't matter if you're in Gaza, if you're in Jerusalem, or if you're in the United States. Every child has the right to grow up to become an adult. It's not political. It's just that. And so that being the case, I think that's a pretty universal message. It's just like conflict, war, whatever it is, that people die. And their message is like, we just want to make sure that every child has an opportunity to grow up to become an adult. Doesn't matter who they are.
Well, Dave, Deirdre, and Victor, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you for the years-long journey. KCRA anchor and reporter Deirdre Fitzpatrick. It's also special projects producer Dave Manicheri and photojournalist and cinematographer Victor Nieto. And they're discussing their documentary, Always Remember Your Name, which chronicles the life of an Italian Holocaust survivor who calls Sacramento home. The extended 90-minute version of the documentary will air on KCRA this Sunday at 7 p.m., as well as on My 58 on Monday, January 27th. At 8 p.m. You're listening to Insight here on Cap Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. We're back in just a moment.